a deep love. You know, Rachel and I, we're doing the small group class talking about step family dynamics, and we're beginning the small group talking about the smart step family marriage. And there's a couple checkup that we did online, and it showed us that one of our biggest weaknesses was our lack of communication. And yet we seem to spend a lot of time communicating. I don't know if you follow us on Facebook, but I mean, we spend a lot of porch time together out on the porch. We do a lot of road trips. We talk a lot, but yet there's this still this feeling of disconnect. We've been married 5 years, 4 years, 4 years. It's going to be 4 years. And I still remember the day I fell in love with her. I met her dropping off my dog at Bring Your Own Dog. We started talking. We exchanged numbers. We continued talking. And my falling in love with Rachel, yes, I was attracted to her at first. I thought she was very pretty. I liked her personality. The reason I decided to board my dog at Bring Your Own Dog was because of a phone conversation in which her personality just resonated, and I knew that was where I wanted to leave my dog. But falling in love with her was a result of two things, time and effort. It involved me coming up and helping her do some stuff that needed to be done there. It involved many, many thousands upon thousands. I can't remember. I'd get my cell phone bill, and I couldn't believe I sent that many text messages. Thousands of text messages a month, hours on the phone talking, communicating via Facebook. But that's how we built our relationship. And over time and over effort, spending time together, talking to one another, I fell in love with her. And I'm deep in love with her today because the more I get to know her, the more I love her. She has little quirks and things that bother me sometimes and get under my skin. And we have our good days and our bad days, our good moments and our bad moments. But I have a picture that her grandmother gave me that's on my nightstand. It's a picture of her when, how old were you, maybe 4 or 5? It was taken of her in the bathtub. It was a headshot. But she has the most cute little look on her face. And I remember a story her grandmother told me about how for a season, her uncles lived with them. And Rachel is very much a morning person. And she would get in and she would go in and she would get to her uncles and say, "Uncle Dan, Uncle Dan, Mr. Sun's up, Mr. Sun's up." And every time I look at that picture and the look on her face, she's my sunshine. She's Mr. Sun's up, Mr. Sun's up. And sometimes it gets on my nerves. A lot of times it gets on my nerves, but I think back and that's part of who she is that really attracted me to her and that I fell in love with. You only learn that by spending time with her. And there's things that we will only learn about God by spending time with him. A couple of weeks, or last week, John David started a 3-part mini-series on habits, spiritual habits. Last week, he talked about the Bible and the importance of the Bible. And he used the verse, 1 Timothy chapter 4. And I'm going to read that again, 1 Timothy chapter 4. The last part of verse 7 and verse 8, out of the New Living Translation says, instead, Paul's writing to Timothy, instead, train yourself to be godly. Physical training is good, but training for godliness is much better. Why is it much better? Because training yourself for godliness promises benefits in this life and in the life to come. And I want you to hone in on a phrase that I think we overlook a lot of times in this. Promising benefits in this life, that's today, that's tomorrow, if God graces us with continued breath and heartbeats, but in the life to come. Now, I've become a follower of Dallas Willard. I encourage you to read everything that he's written. Really stirs me and he really challenges me in my spiritual walk. And a lot of what I'm going to share today I've learned by listening to lectures that are online and by reading his books. I've bought about 6 of them. and I'm reading bits and pieces as God leads me in my spiritual walk and in my journey. And he makes this statement. I heard him give it in a lecture, and I read it recently in a book that he wrote, which a lot of his lectures were turned into books. But he made this statement, and the first time I heard it, I was like, what? And I just kind of forgot about it. And then it came back to me this week as I read it in a book. And then it dawned on me what he was saying. And he says this, I am quite sure that God will let everyone into heaven who can stand it. I want you to think about that for a second. I'm quite sure that God will allow everyone into heaven who can possibly stand it. What? What are you talking about, Dallas? What do you mean? What he was getting at is this. Don't assume that you're going to be happy when you get to heaven unless you prepared for it here on earth. Now, that hit me like a ton of bricks. And that's what Paul's alluding to when he says, train yourself to be godly because godliness promises benefits here and now, but it also promises benefits for the time to come. John David, when he preached the series through Matthew numerous times, Jesus makes the statement that many are going to come on that day and they're saying, Lord, Lord, did I not prophesy in your name? Did I not heal in your name? Did I not cast out, think about that, cast out demons in your name? Did I not feed the poor? Did I not help the widows? Did I not pack backpacks? Did I not go to door and put a postcard on the doors of the houses around our church? And God will look at them and say, depart from me, you workers of iniquity. Now, let me tell you something. That ain't pulling any punches. That's cutting to the chase. Depart from me, you worker of iniquity. I never what? Knew you. We're talking about spiritual habits. Last week, John David introduced the first one, and that was the importance of the Bible. We know that the Bible is profitable for teaching, for reproof, for correction, for training in the right way of living. The Bible is so incredibly important. But there's another aspect that goes hand in hand with the Bible, and that is prayer. And as I for those of you trustees, I beg John David to let me preach one of these. I like every opportunity I can get. So if you don't like it, it's my fault. So tell me to quit asking and I won't. Anyway, I asked him if I could help him out. You deserve a break, John David. You just preached all through Matthew with the exception of two, which I got to do. I love to share the word of God. And I didn't know, I volunteered to do all three. And he asked me if I would do the second one on prayer, and I readily agreed. It's something that I'm learning, and it's an aspect of my spiritual life that I'm developing. And so what I want to share with you today, I want to share you some of the things that I'm learning from my own personal walk. I am by no means a master of what I'm about to tell you. It's something that I am actively, on almost a daily basis, beginning to implement into my life. But I'm telling you, I can see the fruit in my own life of what I'm learning and putting it into practice. And I hope and pray that Rachel and Tyler and Tanner and Kaylin and Blake and our employees at Bring Your Own Dog and our clients, I pray to God that they will be able to see the effect of what I'm going to talk about and share with you this morning as it involves prayer. And I want to talk about prayer as it involves a contemplative and conversational prayer life. Contemplative and conversational. I recently picked up a book by John Ortberg. I saw it at a discount store. It was $3.99. When I see good books that are in my head that I've heard recommended, I try to buy them even if they're not on sale, but I couldn't pass up this one for $3.99. It's entitled Soul Keeping, Caring for the Most Important Part of You. I've just read a few chapters in it, but in the very first chapter, John Ortberg shares how this book came into being. And when I read it, I was like, man, God, this is a godsend. And he shares how the substance of this book is a result of several years in relationship with Dallas Willard. I had no idea. And I'm not trying to elevate a man, but as I listen to this man and I read his writings, I see my grandfather. I see steadiness. I see consistency. I see a life that had a profound impact, not only upon Christians, but he was a professor of philosophy at the University of Southern California. He struggled because he was a Southern Baptist minister and he wanted to go back into ministry after seminary, but the Lord spoke to him and told him, Dallas, if you go to the church, the colleges will be closed to you, but if you go to the college, the church will be open. And so instead of going where he wanted to go and ministering in the church, he took up teaching in secular universities and eventually became professor of philosophy at USC. Where he retired. Brilliant man, but such a spiritual giant as you read his writings. And in the first chapter, John Ortberg shares the first conversation that he had with Dallas. He went to visit him in his home, a very plain, cluttered, as far as books were everywhere. He said there were books stacked everywhere. But very humble, old furniture, a window unit that made all kinds of racket that they were going to let run until it quit. But in this humble home, he sat down with Dallas. And Dallas, one of the first things Dallas told him was this. I think it's up on the screen. The most important thing in your life is not what you do. It's who you become. That's what you will take with you into eternity. The most important thing about your life is not what you do, it's who you become. Because that's what you are going to take into eternity. I want to ask you a question because I've never thought of eternity in this way. Do you realize that you are going to go into eternity as you are? Yes, you're going to be transformed. If you're a Christ follower, you will be in the presence of God. But there is no guarantee that there's going to be this sudden, all of a sudden, man, I'm this spiritual giant. I've wasted away my life. I've developed no intimacy with the Father. And all of a sudden, I'm just going to be God's best friend. I don't think it works that way. I believe Paul alluded to this in 1 Timothy chapter 4, that we are preparing for our eternity. Now, it's ironic that he would say, the most important thing in your life is not what you do, it's who you become. Because we're talking about habits. And all of us know that a habit is something that you repeatedly do. And so a spiritual habit is something that I repeatedly do that produces spiritual fruit, that benefits my soul. Well, that doesn't make sense. How in the world is it more important for what I become than what I do, if I'm talking about developing a spiritual habit, something that I do to become? It seems all out of whack. Well, we all know the famous Aristotle quote, you are what you repeatedly do. We are what we repeatedly do. So the irony of it all is the most important thing about us is what we become, but we become what we repeatedly do. And what Dallas was referring to was the busyness of life. What he was referring to is as far as it's not what you do. He's talking about building buildings and pastoring churches and teaching classes and running businesses. That's not the most important part of my life. It is part of my life. But the most important thing that I can ever do is to spend time growing close to the Father, because if I have any desire to spend eternity in His presence, I better know Him when I get there. And I'm not going to know Him spending all my time on Facebook or Instagram or playing whatever game it is that we play. That's not how it's going to happen. It's not going to happen becoming a workaholic. It's not going to happen pastoring great big congregations. It's going to happen because I am very intentional in the habits that I develop in my life. John David started with the first one last week, spending time in the Word, God speaking to me. Now, I'm going to tell you, I believe, some people would probably label me a mystic, because I believe that God can speak to me in other ways than the Word. But if God speaks to me in a way other than the Word, it will never violate what He's already laid out in His Word. He speaks first to me in His Word. And nothing He says to me otherwise, if it violates this book, then I can throw it out. When you read that somebody's prophesying that the Lord's going to return on April 26th, you can immediately cast that out. Why? Because Jesus Himself said only the Father knows the day or the hour. If God didn't tell that to Jesus, He ain't going to tell it to me. He's not going to tell it to Brother Joe Blow that's trying to get $96 a month. I want to read another quote. John Ortberg, he's talking to Dallas, and in this conversation, Dallas tells him this: you are an unceasing spiritual being with an eternal destiny in God's great universe. You are an unceasing spiritual being with an eternal destiny in God's great universe. I put it up on the screen because I want all of us to repeat that, but like Ryan did, I think it's so appropriate to do, is to substitute pronouns. And instead of the pronoun you, I want you to make it personal and say I. So I want us to read that together. Will you read it with me? I am an unceasing spiritual being with an eternal destiny in God's great universe. Read it again. I am an unceasing spiritual being with an eternal destiny in God's great universe. One more time, let it sink in. I am an unceasing spiritual being with an eternal destiny in God's great universe. Who are you? I'm an unceasing spiritual being with an eternal destiny in the greatness of God's universe. Now, if that doesn't put significance on your life, I don't know what will. If it does not put eternity in perspective, if it doesn't put today in perspective, that I am not the sum total of my physicality, that I'm not the color of my hair, that I'm not the length of my beard, that I'm not the odor of my body or the size of my feet or my IQ. That's not who I am. That's what I look like. But I am an unceasing spiritual being with an eternal destiny. Do you know how long eternal is? It's a long, long time in God's great universe. How significant is that? He goes on to say this. This isn't on the screen, but we need to do what Dallas recommends John do here. He said, that's the most important thing for you to know about you. You should write that down. Leave it up there for a little bit longer. Take a picture of it. You should repeat it regularly. You should write that on a post-it note and put it on your bathroom mirror. Put it on the refrigerator. Put it on your computer monitor. Somewhere where you will see it all the time. I am an unceasing spiritual being with an eternal destiny in God's great universe. Brother John, he says, you listen to this because this is deep. Brother John, you think you have to be someplace else or accomplish something more to find peace, but it's right here. God has yet to bless anyone except where they are. It's the beauty of the Beatitudes. Everybody can be blessed if they access the kingdom. That's the promise. Your soul is not just something that lives on after your body dies. It's the most important thing about you. It is your life. What are you doing to sustain your life? Let me tell you something, church. I believe with all of my heart that I'm meant for something so much more. That I'm meant for more than running a dog kennel. I'm meant for more than just being a worshiper here at New Heights and a participant and a sharer of the gospel. God longs. He's longed since the creation of the world. He's longed for fellowship with his creation. You can start in the very beginning of Genesis and you see it with Adam and Eve. God walked with Adam and Eve and he communed with them intimately. It says in the cool of the evening. And when they sinned, they hid. You reread the story. We talk a lot about how sin separates us from God. Why does it separate us from God? I've always said, well, because sin can't dwell in his holiness. Yeah, it can. Yeah, it can. There's sin sitting in this room, but God's in this room. Sin can be in the presence of God. You know how sin separates it? I get a guilty conscience and I'm full of shame. And what do? I run and I hide. But what did God do? Did God say, dadgummit, those stupid people? Why can't they? I heard this all my life. Why can't they do anything right? I give them one little rule, and they can't keep it. Is that what Genesis 3 says happened? Absolutely not. What did God do? He did what he always did. He came for fellowship. And where were Adam and Eve? They were in the bush because they were naked and they were ashamed. Did God say, you goofballs, you screw ups, get out of here, come on. What does he say? He lovingly says, where are you? Where are you? Now, do you think God really didn't know where Adam and Eve were? He knew exactly where they were. What was he doing? He was calling them out. He was calling them to himself. Come to me. Jesus said to the crowds, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. There's always the invitation. Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man open the door and come into me, I will come into. Do you realize that wasn't written to sinners, but that's what we use as part of an evangelism trail to lead people to the Lord? You know that was written to Christians? Jesus is standing at the door of every one of your heart. He's knocking. And he's saying, you know what? All you have to do is open the door. You don't even have to invite me in. Open the door and I will come into you. And we will sup together. We will have fellowship. Now I want us to look real quick at Hebrews chapter 6. Real quickly, I want to give you two principles and two practices that I've begun to learn and practice that are changing my relationship with God, and especially as it comes to communicating with Him. Hebrews chapter 6, this is my primary text. Beginning in verse 13, the writer of Hebrews says, for when God made a promise to Abraham, since he had no one greater by whom to swear, he swore by himself, saying, surely I will bless you and multiply you. And thus Abraham, having patiently waited, obtained the promise. For people swear by something greater than themselves, and in all their disputes, an oath is final for confirmation. So when God desired to show more convincingly to the heirs of the promise the unchangeable character of his purpose, he guaranteed it with an oath. So that by two unchangeable things in which it is impossible for God to lie, we who have fled for refuge, that's us, might have strong encouragement to hold fast to the hope set before us. Now, what is the hope that is set before us? He's about to tell us. Verse 19, we have this as a sure and steadfast anchor of the most important part of our being, our soul. You want a steadfast anchor to hold you firm in a time of storm? You want a steadfast anchor to help keep you grounded when you're on cloud 9? You want a steadfast anchor for your soul that'll help you when you get the cancer diagnosis, that will help you when you get the phone call saying your dad is in the hospital, your mom is having a biopsy on Monday, they think it's lung cancer. You want to know what the anchor to your soul is when that happens? It is this, a hope that enters into the inner place behind the curtain, where Jesus has gone as a forerunner on our behalf, having become a high priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. Now, I'm not going to take the time to go into all of the theological ramifications. That's a whole nother 3 or 4 message series. You have to look at the whole book of Hebrews and know the Old Testament and the Old Covenant. We're not going to take the time to go into this, but this is the hope that we can have intimate communion beyond the curtain, beyond the veil, in the Holy of Holies, where the Spirit of Almighty God dwells, that we can go in there boldly because of what Jesus did, because He's already gone in there on our behalf, because He came as God with us, as we learned throughout the whole book of Matthew, that He told us, "Lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the earth." You know what that means? Access granted. Now. Right now, where you are. Remember that quote? God has yet to bless anyone except for where they already are. Where you are right now, you have access to the blessing of God if you'll just reach out and grab a hold of Him. How do we do that? Real quickly, I'm going to walk through 2 principles and 2 practices that I've learned within probably the last 3 months, and I begin to slowly. Let me tell you something. When you get to the practices, I'm going to go through it quick, but let me tell you, we can talk about it more. If you're really interested in doing this, we can talk about it a little more later. Maybe we can help each other and hold each other accountable. When you get into this, you don't want to be a hero. Bite off 10 days. No, you want to start in small increments, and that's where I am. But principle number 1 is this. We have to ruthlessly, this is a quote from Dallas Willard, "I must ruthlessly," he uses the word ruthlessly, "ruthlessly eliminate hurry from my life." I must be ruthless to eliminate hurry in my life. Why is that? Very simply, God is in no hurry. God is not, I got news for you, if you haven't figured it out, God is not on your timetable. A day is as a, how many years? And 1,000 years are as a day. God's not on our timetable. So why do I get my skivvies in a wad? Why? Because I'm selfish. Because I'm self-centered. Because that's my sinful nature. I've got to ruthlessly eliminate hurry. Now, there's 2 things I want us to notice here. We're talking about 2 things. We're talking about pace for 1. The other day I was in Dollar Tree. It was on Wednesday. And Rachel was preparing for the meal, and I was getting ready for youth. And I was having problems with the printer and things, and I had to make a quick run to Dollar Tree because I knew that was the cheapest place to get it. And so I drive as fast as I can there. I whip into a front parking space, and I'm hurrying to the door, and there's an elderly lady slowly pushing her cart. And I'm like, come on, can't you see? I got places to go and people to see. I got to meet with John David at 4. And you know what the Holy Spirit talked to me? Ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life. And you know what I did? Thank the Lord. I didn't push her out of the way. I stopped. And I gave her margin. And then I deliberately walked slowly to where I knew what I was looking for. I slowly stooped to where the items were. And I walked slowly to the cash register. I forgot another item that I needed. Did you know you can get batteries real cheap at Dollar Tree? Instead of getting mad at myself, I got out of line and I walked slowly. Ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life. Eliminate hurry in traffic. Eliminate hurry in your schedule. You've got to be ruthless about this because God is not in a hurry. How many times do we read, "Be still," or "Wait, I waited patiently for the Lord. They that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength." It says in verse 15 that Abraham, having patiently waited, obtained the promise. If Abraham, the father of faith, has to patiently wait, man, I probably got a long time to wait. What is that chorus we've been singing recently, Slay? "Slow down, take time, breathe in. He'll reveal what's to come." It's in the waiting. You know that? It's in the waiting. Ruthlessly eliminate hurry. A key thing that I'm learning, because Rachel and I have some of our biggest arguments are over because I wait until the last minute. I've told her I work good under pressure. Yeah, and I make life hell on everybody else around me because I work good under pressure. That is not Christ-likeness. Preparation. You ever notice that in the Bible, a day begins at sundown? Monday will begin when the sun goes down in the Bible. That's been challenging to me, and I've begun to, last night, whereas I would normally take my shower this morning, I went ahead and did everything tonight, last night. Ironed my shirt, ironed my pants, got everything out. Preparation, because I want to stop. I want to ruthlessly eliminate hurry. Principle number two, I got to hurry. Y'all need to ruthlessly eliminate hurry and just lay back and just let me talk. Okay, no, just kidding. The second thing, and this is so important, and I'm going to work quick through this because you're going to know exactly what I'm talking about. You have to arrange for and protect sacred space in your life. How many of you have sacred space in your life? I'm not talking about the room where no one else is allowed to go. I'm not talking about the drawer that no one else is allowed, the file drawer that stays locked. I'm not talking about that kind of sacred space. I'm talking about the sacred space that is margin in my life. I have to purposefully make and provide for margin in my life. And there's two main ways that the Lord's dealt with me in doing this. And I'm real good at one, and I'm trying to get better at the other. But the first way that I've learned to set aside sacred place is I do not turn my phone on until I'm ready to leave the house in the morning. We purposefully, about a year ago, went and got a landline. The people that need to have that number have that number. Which leads me to the second thing that I'm getting better at, but haven't quite mastered yet. And that is turning my phone and all of my electronic devices off 30 minutes to an hour before I go to bed. Turn it off and I meditate. I think through my day, process that. And then when I get up, the last thing I need to see is how many of you know that your attention is the last great frontier on planet Earth? I mean, well, besides the depths of the sea and galaxies far, far away. Here on planet Earth, beside, with the exception of the deep blue sea, our attention is the last great frontier, and everybody is trying to get it except God. I don't know about you, but I've never got a and looked on there and it says, God, sup? What you doing? What's for dinner? It's never happened. God has never, while I've been on my electronic device, given me a pop-up, not even for the Bible. I get those all the time. Bibles that, this Bible I've already bought, it still comes up on Amazon. Ad, hey, check this out. You might be, yeah, I'm so interested in it. I bought it 2 years ago. Everything in life is trying to grab our attention, and you have to turn it off. You have to purposefully do that. So you got to set aside time just for God and protect it from distractions. I'm not talking about great, huge moves here. I'm talking about the discipline of just turning my phone off or switching it to airplane mode. But that makes us feel special when we get that little, oh, I'm important. Somebody wants me. Somebody needs me. When what I need, put all that noise to the side and focus on Him. Now, two basic practices, solitude and silence. Solitude is basically getting away from the noise, removing myself, finding ways to be alone. And that's not getting away with a book I need to read. Getting away and doing nothing. I mean, if you've ever tried that, I mean, literally do nothing. You don't listen to music. You don't read a book. You don't watch a movie. We ain't talking about chilling. I'm talking about purposefully removing myself from the noise and sitting still and being still so that I can know that that you're God. You know what I'm finding? I'm finding that He meets me there. He comes to me. Talk about the garden. It's finding your garden. Sitting on the back porch with nothing but the sound of the birds. You're just sitting there and you breathe in. Practice I've started doing is taking a big, deep inhale, allowing my chest to expand where I look like I'm even fatter than I am. And as I inhale, I breathe in, Abba. And then as I exhale, I belong to you. I learned that by reading some writings of Brennan Manning, another guy I highly recommend. Just a little practice. Now, you don't want to start with 3 hours of solitude. You'll go bonkers. I've gotten to about 30 minutes. And I started with just a handful of minutes sitting in a rocking chair in our guest bedroom or out on the back on the patio. But away from everything and just allowing God to come to me. He comes to us, church. The second thing is silence. That's no talking, no noise. So I want us to practice that real quick. Hannah, if you'll go ahead and come to the piano. We're going to start real small. We're just going to start with a minute. But I want you to just sit there. Put your phone. Put everything away. Kids, you can do this too. You can do this for a minute. I promise you. Just sit there and let's just, for 1 minute, just be silent.